Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. We are glad to have you come along with us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
The first thing that I would like to say on the show is I'm going to invite you all to join the CCTA. The parent of a wake-up call, join with the CCTA at Moore's Barbecue, February 27th. That's this upcoming Thursday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. We will be out by 8 p.m.
And that's Moore's Barbecue in New Bern.
In New Bern, yeah. And if you want to come a little bit early and get your food early, come by 6 o'clock or whatever else, but we don't mind if you eat while we're having the meeting also. But again, Moore's Barbecue, Thursday, February 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. We'd love to have you there. Where are we going to go?
The executive order.
Yes.
Okay. Pat, you had a reference to an executive order from the president.
Yes. Yes. I have a story here that I think provides a umbrella to talk about some of the DOGE issues and some of Trump's executive orders in general. But this one is at Red State, and the title of the article is Trump Executive Order Wipes Out 90 Years of Practice and Permanently Changes the Executive Branch. One of the principles that Trump is relying on for his executive orders and all the changes that he's making is that the Constitution says the president is the chief of the executive branch. And he reads that to mean that if your agency is in the executive branch, you are not an independent agency. You report to him.
And the only things that are supposedly not in the executive branch would be the legislature and the judicial branch, which is doing the court process, correct?
Right. The other two branches of government. But he runs the executive branch. But see, all of these agencies and attorney generals have run to the court to block all of his decisions and his executive orders, saying that he doesn't have the power to do this.
Even though they all work for him.
Right. So he put it in an executive order. Hello. These agencies all work for me. The CIA.
The FCC, the Federal Trade Commission.
EPA.
EPA, yeah.
So this is a strike against the bureaucracy.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Right.
And saying you're not going to be an independent fourth branch of government.
Right.
You are going to be properly under the executive branch, which is what was supposed to be the case all along.
Yeah, and it'll keep things like the EPA deciding on the CAFE standard on their own. Everybody know what the CAFE standard is. The electric car mandate and stuff like that.
Where these were never laws, never made into laws.
Right. They're regulations by the EPA that they, unilaterally issue that stops that. And the executive order creates an executive to be in each of these agencies that is a White House liaison at the GS-15 senior executive service level. And any regulation, anything that costs money, has to go to OMB and has to go to the White House.
Now, I want to ask, what kind of effect, now I'm going to switch hats for just one second. I think of the IRS, and the IRS, if you have a complaint with the IRS, you go before the IRS court system, not necessarily courts. It's a tax court, okay?
Right.
And so there you're...
So it's not in the judicial branch.
It's not in the judicial branch. Now, I believe the EPA has something very similar to that, where you have a complaint on an EPA ruling about you having a wetland in your yard or whatever. You don't go to
to an administrative judge.
An administrative judge that is within the agency.
Right.
And I wonder if this is going to have any effect on that.
Well, I think once he digs out all of the DEI hires and the leftists that are making these policies that people complain about, then you're liable to get a fairer resolution if you have a complaint. I mean, it took a while, but the EPA can no longer regulate pools of water on your land.
Or your microwave or your dishwasher. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, this brings us back to what the Founding Fathers set up, or closer to what the Founding Fathers set up, because what we were dealing with, what we are currently dealing with until things like this go in effect, is an actual fourth branch of government that is running things.
Right. And I don't know if you watched the interview last night with Sean Hannity and the president and Elon. One of the things that Elon said, which is very elegant, was that if these agencies are not complying with the president's executive orders, then they are, and he represents the will of the people because he's elected, then we don't live in a democracy, we live in a bureaucracy.
That's true.
Yes. So that's why he was so happy when that CFO at, where was she, paid the $59 million to New York.
Yeah.
For the illegal hotel.
For the hotels, yeah.
Right.
FEMA, I think.
FEMA, that's right. She was in FEMA. Why, they rushed over there and fired all of them.
And got the money back.
And, you know, those were folks that that somehow they decided when they got into government bureaucracy employment that was a lifetime guarantee, that they were 100% protected regardless of what they did.
Yeah, you and I were talking about an article we both read about that Heather Hickman. She'd been practicing law for 15 years, and she got a probationary position at NIH, I think.
I think, yeah, National Institute of Health, yes.
Right. And because she was probationary, she got her notice of termination. And she was,
crocodile tears. Yes.
Well, wait a minute. Weren't these people offered buyouts?
Yes.
Yes. And
they chose not
to take them. And I read another article that said, and the question we'll ask you when you complain to court about getting fired is, why didn't you take the buyout? Which is a good question.
Yeah.
Especially if you're probationary, what have you got to lose?
Yeah, and the buyout was 8 months' worth of pay.
But there was an early deadline, like February 2nd.
Yeah, February 6th, I think it was.
Six. Yeah. And a lot of this stuff has come since then. But the lawyer that's head of the special counsel office, or was head of it, is suing to get his job back. And the first judge said, yep, give him his job back. And you can't have anybody else oversee that office. And you have to give him access to all of his materials. Trump has appealed that to the Supreme Court. So once the court rules in his favor on that one, which I feel pretty confident they will, then all these other judge orders, it says, give them their jobs back, give them their jobs back. All of that goes away because it will stand for the principle that the president, as the head of the executive branch, has the right to hire and fire.
And you are hired at the pleasure of the president.
And the precedent for the Supreme Court to uphold Trump is that during the Biden administration, there was someone on one of the boards, I think it was Sean Spicer, I could be wrong on that, that Biden fired before the end of his term, and he went to court, and the court said that Biden had the right to fire him. So they can't...
Biden or Obama?
It was Biden, I think.
Oh, okay.
Same thing.
Obama.
But, well, one of them. So the precedent has been set that the president has the right to put his people in place. He was elected.
Right.
You know, it's interesting how the Democrats are all up in arms about what Musk is doing. And obviously going to use the courts to fight him and what Trump's doing in every way possible. And you would think that from a standpoint, a political standpoint, that they would want to let the American people know that they are concerned. They also are concerned about fraud, waste, and abuse. And obviously they're not. And I understand there's over 40 at least 40 lawsuits that have been filed.
Last I checked, it was 80.
80, okay. I'm a day behind.
Keep up, Alan.
But they're just going out to try to use the courts to overturn. And now one accusation was that Musk was actually making decisions without, and he doesn't have the authority since he was not confirmed by the Senate. But I think they're just making sure that what Musk is doing amounts to recommendations to the president, mm-hmm. and that the president, as long as he's the one who makes the ultimate decision on these things, it should be able to clear the court, just like you said, Mary, that it should be okay for the president to be able to manage the executive branch.
Well, talking about the Democrats raising holy heck about everything that Trump and Doge are doing, your comment was you'd think they'd want to see some of this done. Greg Gutfeld made a really good point on his show night before last, where he said Trump has scoped out the common sense position, which leaves no position for the Democrats to take, where common man, the working man, the vote that they lost in the election, says, yeah, that makes sense.
There's also Congressman Tim Burchett, and this time will tell whether this is true. His comment was he expects a lot of resignations in Congress from congressmen who were getting kickbacks from these various organizations.
That's why the Treasury payments have nothing in the line, so you can't trace them back.
Can't trace it back to a budget line item.
Can't trace the money.
But some of this is going to be traceable.
That's only $4.7 trillion?
Yeah.
Just chicken
traceable.
Feed.
Right.
You know, this just shows to me, too, how important it is to bring in outside people when you're trying to evaluate some bureaucracy or agency. To rely on the people inside that agency is just a fool's task.
That's why
most of these agencies have auditors. They have people that are supposed to be doing exactly what Musk is doing, but they haven't been doing it.
That's why he fired the IGs when he came in.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, before we go, I invite you to Thursday, February 27th, Moore's Barbecue in New Bern for the CCTA meeting, 6:30. Thank you.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Pat, you wanted to add on to this.
Okay. We just mentioned the fact that the lawfare, all the lawyers that are lined up to take Trump to court to stop every single thing he's trying to do, 14 state attorney generals, all leftists, blue states, ended up in front of Judge Tanya Chutkan in D.C., and she's the judge that was chomping at the bit to get Trump in that Jack Smith insurrection case. And they asked her for a TRO, a temporary restraining order, to keep Trump from using DOJ, and that all these people were going to lose their jobs. And so there was going to be irreparable harm.
All this speculation, yes.
Yeah, and she said, well, they've asked me to take judicial notice of all these newspaper articles about these people are getting terminated and these people are on leave. And she says, that's not facts. That's not a record upon which to base a TRO. Color me shocked, because I thought for sure she was a judge in the bag. She's an Obama appointee. And you notice a lot of the judges that are entering these orders are an Obama appointee. Two of the judges, the one from Rhode Island that said that Trump had to restart the USAID funding, turns out he's on the board of an NGO that has gotten $128 million over the last 10 years. It's called Crossroads Rhode Island. And he failed to disclose that conflict of interest when he ruled that Trump couldn't stop the USAID funding. One of the Republicans in Congress is writing up an impeachment for him. And there's another judge that also has stopped Trump. And I forget which one of the many orders he did, but they're ginning up an impeachment for him as well. So a lot of this stuff's going to end up in front of the Supreme Court, but this one about firing that lawyer, I think, is going to put the kibosh on all the, you can't fire those people.
Well, I hope that that's the case, because otherwise the executive branch and the president's going to be powerless.
I know.
We won't be able to do anything. I mean, that's what they're basically trying to do. And, you know, and while we're talking about, you know, legal things, just one other comment about impeaching judges. My understanding that to impeach a judge, you have to be able to prove a crime or misdemeanor or something. Isn't that correct?
No.
Isn't it like the president?
No.
You can't impeach a president,
no.
Whatever. Okay.
No. The Constitution says they serve on good behavior.
Oh, really? Well,
that's all.
That eliminate 90% of them. If you did that. So anyway, but while we're talking about the legal thing, I wanted to mention something that's heating up in New York City about the governor of New York.
Oh, getting rid of
Hochul.
Getting rid of the mayor.
She came out and said that she is considering getting rid of discharging. I guess she has the authority in under state, New York state law, to remove the governor of New York City. Pardon me, the mayor of New York City.
As far as I know, that's really in question.
Yeah, it is in question. And
well,
the thing
three
is,
of his aides resign. So. His deputy mayors. So now there's some commission that governs the mayor's office that says he now does not have a full government. So he's unable to continue the duties of his office. Excuse me, Alan.
That's okay. I mean, these are all facts going on about the case. It's getting complicated. But the ironic thing about it was Mayor Adams was indicted several months ago, I believe.
Right.
And the governor at that time could have, based on the indictment by itself, could have removed him.
At that
time.
Nothing
was done at that time, okay? But now, and maybe just these things, just coincidences, if you believe in coincidences, which I don't, but they Adams met with Holman, the new guy in charge of the border, and actually, I believe he went to the inauguration, Trump's inauguration also, talking about Mayor Adams now. And he seems to be willing to work with the Trump administration on removing these illegal aliens. And a lot of people think that's what prompted Hochul to try now coming up with the idea of discharging.
Many of those charges were dropped. And that was the reason some of those deputy mayors quit, was because those charges were dropped.
Well, also, the lawyers in the Justice Department that were told to file the motion quit. Seven quit. And they finally put all of them in a room and said, who's going to file this motion? Because if nobody signs it, I'll sign it, and you're all fired. So the motion said that dropping the charges was in the best interest of the state because it would make it possible for Mayor Adams to work with Tom Homan and Immigration Enforcement to work on the immigration problem in New York. That's why all those people in New York quit, because they said, and the prosecutor that refused to file the order said it was a quid pro quo.
Well, you know, we just mentioned a few minutes ago about sense and nonsense that Trump has a lot of support of people because what he's doing makes sense, common sense. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this issue from the Governor Hochul's viewpoint, he gets indicted, she doesn't do anything. The charges are dropped. So now he doesn't even have the charges against him. Then she wants to get rid of him. So when you look at it from the standpoint, well, now he's shown the charges aren't even going to go forward, and then we're going to get rid of him. So that makes no sense.
It's because of that immigration thing, and because he's willing to cooperate with Trump.
He's giving up that sanctuary city routine.
Well, yeah. Well, it was so political. It was so obviously political. He complained to Biden about the immigration and not getting any more money from the federal government. And soon after that, they indicted him, which was the pattern of the Joe Biden Department of Justice.
Yep.
And all of these lawyers that were resigning rather than file it, I say good riddance, bye-bye now.
House cleaning, just, voluntary house
just
cleaning.
Just fewer lawyers that Trump has to personally fire.
Alan, you wanted to head off to the Ukraine.
Yeah, well, not personally, but anyway, I'd rather stay here in North Carolina myself. But anyway, Ukraine is a topic I think we're all concerned about. It's been an atrocious tragedy. Obviously, Russia was at fault, and Russia, as usual, will take advantage of any weakness that they perceive. And Biden was certainly very weak in some of the comments he made, because originally when the war started 300 and some odd days ago, I think it was 300 days ago, anyway, Biden came out and said, well, it's okay if he invades or he stacks up his army on the border as long as he doesn't go too far or something.
Yeah,
ridiculous. Yeah, minor incursion. As though Putin knows what a minor incursion is. But, you know, they're up to over a million casualties. And they estimate that this is the most amount of people that have been killed in any war or conflict since World War II. And I think that's what Trump's coming from. Trump's coming from, I want to stop the killing. Because I think, as a man of empathy, when he sees that kind of tragedy, he wants to stop it. I don't care where it is. And but now you see the, you know, Zelensky coming out. Now, he did not go to the meeting that they had in Saudi Arabia between
Russia,
the U.S. and Russia.
Yeah. Was he invited?
He was not invited. He was going to Saudi Arabia for another issue, but he was not invited to that meeting because I guess the Trump administration felt, well, we need to establish some kind of working relationship with Russia before we get into the details of an agreement, which makes sense to me. But
right. So. And that's what Rubio said yesterday during the interview.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing, I believe, started. It had been stated previously, before this whole war started, that Ukraine would not be a member of NATO. And the argument was being made that if you let Ukraine into NATO, as far as Russia is concerned, that would be like Mexico joining some kind of alliance with Russia. We would be very uncomfortable with that. And when Biden talked about letting Ukraine into NATO, it set things off. Now, there's also the matter of the election of Zelensky, which was questionable at best, and we probably played a very unfortunate role in. And one of the conditions that's being tossed about ending this war is that Ukraine is going to be required to hold a real election.
Yeah, he shut down elections. He shut down the Orthodox churches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done other stuff.
He shut down the free press.
Shut down the free press. So he's running an authoritarian regime, so he's got a lot of nerve complaining about.
And taking our money.
Yes.
Yes, and not accounting for our money.
Now he's telling us, I don't know what happened to it. Right.
And there was a point where he was taking our money to pay retirement benefits to a number of people there.
Yeah.
And Trump has mentioned on several occasions, and, you know, about the possibility that this could escalate into World War III. And now we have some of the European countries who are saying, well, you shouldn't negotiate a peace without us being involved. We want to be involved. And some of them want to continue the war. And Biden wanted to continue it until Ukraine won. Well, Ukraine was never going to win.
Nope.
And he wanted to continue it. That's the kind of thinking that leads to this escalation. If you go back and look historically, go back to World War I, even in World War II, it was one side versus the other, and they keep building up, both of them thinking they can win, and it just goes on and just destroys civilization. So I think Trump's got the right idea, and I don't know whether every move he's going to make is going to be the absolute best one, but he's got somebody stepping in there doing what he said. He said when he got elected, one of the first things he'd do would try to stop that war. And he's making the effort. I mean,
there's also,
win, lose, or draw, at least he's making the effort.
There's also the question of the rare earth minerals that are in Ukraine. And should we get some kind of payback for all the money that we've thrown in the direction of Ukraine?
Zelensky's throwing a fit about that.
I know.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to give any assurance to us.
After everything we've done.
After everything we've done, yeah. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call Show. And by the way, again, I invite you to the CCTA Wake Up, the CCTA Get Together at Moore's Barbecue. We're meeting at Moore's Barbecue, not Stanley Hall, this Thursday night, 6:30 to 8 p.m. This is February 27th.
Moore's Barbecue in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. J. Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Thank you again for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're sticking with Ukraine.
I wanted to follow up and just comment on the interview that Marco Rubio, Michael Witkoff, and I forget the name of the third fella, that are doing the negotiating with Russia over in Riyadh. I watched part of that interview, and he said that he outlined the principles that they're using and said that the first thing they're doing, like Alan said, is they're reestablishing rules for interacting, because we have not interacted with Russia since this began. Ukraine is not invited to the table. This is for the big boys.
This is for the big boys.
We'll let you know later. The Europeans are mad that they're not at the table. Rubio acknowledged that at some point the Europeans will have to be included because they have sanctions. Part of this talk we're having with Russia is going to involve lifting our sanctions, and the European countries have their own sanctions, so at some point they'll have to be included in the negotiations.
And of course, the Europeans are sort of insulted because, again, President Trump is saying, you got to pay for your own defense. They don't like that.
They're mad as hell about J.D. Vance's speech lecturing them on free speech. And when Rubio was being interviewed by NBC, Margaret Brennan said to him, Vance was standing in a right-wing country talking where free speech had been weaponized into the Holocaust. And they had far right positions, and it made it not sound good. And Rubio said, no, that's not true. He said, free speech wasn't weaponized into the Holocaust. The Holocaust happened because Germany was an authoritarian regime that had a list of enemies, mostly Jews. And he said, there was no free speech in Nazi Germany. And, you know, this is the kind of thing, finally, a Republican pushes back. At the time the nonsense is spewed.
That's right. Don't let it pass by.
Don't let it pass by. Call it on the carpet right away. So I just watched part of that interview. It was pretty good. But I just want to comment on what followed that was a snippet of the German who got up to answer J.D. Vance and started crying.
Okay.
He started crying. He was so upset by what J.D. Vance said about free speech that he started crying, and he had to leave the podium, and the audience sat there and softly clapped for him. Yes, we understand. This is so upsetting. And this mean Americans.
And again, I seem to remember that J.D. Vance says you're going to be upset because you're insulted. And J.D. Vance is saying, but we've had to listen to Greta Thunberg for 10 years.
Well, he said, if you were content to listen to Greta Thunberg, this should be no problem. She was only, 12 when she started?
That's right.
And the thing about it is that you question, some people question, well, why did J.D. Vance even bring this subject up about another country's and how they deal with freedom of speech? But I think it's right to bring it up because these people and these other countries that are our allies should reflect to some extent, or at least the most extent, our values. I mean, you select allies because they have values that are important to you. Otherwise, how do you separate a friend from an ally? And to have Germany come out and take this really extreme position on restricting freedom of speech, because I heard there were a couple of German people that they interviewed that were behind this. And what it's based on is essentially saying, if one person insults somebody else, that's a crime. Okay? It's not just subject to restriction. It's actually a crime. And not only that, let's say, for example, you say something that somebody else takes as an insult, which, of course, is it's a subjective thing. Who determines what's an insult? It's usually the person who's insulted. So that person might determine anything you say to them as an insult. And then they came out and this person said, was asked, this German who was behind this, was asked, well, would it be a crime if the insult took place on social media and that was reposted, was sent out by that person to other people? He said, yes, that would also be a crime. So if somebody says something that insults somebody, and that's determined to be criminal, and you might not have even known that, but you reposted it and sent it to other people, then you're committing another crime. And, you know, the whole essence of free speech is the word free. Free meaning that you can say anything you want. If you don't want to listen to it, you shut it off. If you want to dismiss it, you dismiss it. But when you go in there and start trying to sift out what's an insult, what isn't an insult, what offends somebody, what doesn't offend somebody, you go down that rabbit hole, you no longer have free speech.
Now, Mary, I'm going to ask you, because you remember the names better than I, Gert Wilder, and who else? Savage.
Gert Wilder's
on a
Dutch.
Blank.
The point was that she apparently mentioned that Muhammad had married a 9-year-old girl, which is the truth. But that was considered an insult in the custom.
By Islam.
By Islam.
Well, what about Charlie Hebdo? Don't remember they slaughtered that whole office because they printed a picture of Muhammad.
The thought that comes to mind with all this stuff, do you think any of these people would have survived an elementary school playground? I mean, really?
Well, no, I think those kids in Europe are busy insulting each other, too. It's when they grow up and learn the rules of civilized speech, which has now devolved into, how dare you insult me? But like Alan said, if you go down that rabbit hole, you'll have the government involved in every sentence you say.
It's not what you say, it's what I hear.
And Bob, you were just mentioning Elizabeth Sabatish Wolf, who was taken to court because she mentioned that Muhammad had married a nine-year-old and therefore was a pedophile. I don't know the final outcome of that case because we met her when it was still being decided. But she was in Europe, was actually threatened with jail because she told something that was true. And I would like to mention that the Islamic definition of blasphemy has nothing to do with truth. If you say something that makes me feel bad or insults me, I can call that blasphemy. It has nothing to do with truth. So if you say something negative about Islam, you can, according to Islam,
be killed,
accused of blasphemy and jailed.
And killed.
That too.
Yeah, stabbed to death.
Well, we would like to talk a little bit about what's going on at the General Assembly. We got some bills coming in. Would that be appropriate?
Actually, I want to let Mary get her one in. We're reading about they want to audit
Fort Knox.
Fort Knox.
And I would love, do you remember, it didn't end well, but do you remember Geraldo Rivera going into Al Capone's
vault?
I want to do that with Fort Knox. I want to find out exactly what's there. We've been lied to for years.
We don't want the same results, no.
Well, the audits that from the 50 past years have disappeared. So we don't have a current audit.
Well, let's go in and find out what's there and what's not and do our own audit.
It's kind of scary.
Well, I think DOGE is scheduled to do that. Well, I understand.
I don't know if it's been scheduled. They're talking about it.
I don't think they can stop it.
No, somebody tweeted to Elon and said, why don't you go in? I think it was Rand Paul. Why don't you go in and audit Fort Knox? And Elon said, okay, let's do it.
Now, if they did, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that they did that and there was nothing there. Would that collapse the American economy?
Yeah. That means we have nothing to back
backing.
The currency. It might as well be Bitcoin.
And at that point, we are officially a banana republic.
Well, we already are.
Well, other than the fact that if given a little bit of time, if we can come up with the oil resources, energy resources, we've got partially covered.
I think if our dollar were based on the gold standard, which originally it was, that would probably happen. But I think that the amount of money in that gold is nowhere near the amount of dollars that are out all over the world and so on. So I don't know whether it would collapse the dollar or not. It's not going to be good for the economy, but still, we're not, our dollar is not based on the amount of gold we have anymore.
Not based on anything.
Before we head local, I just want to mention the Department of Justice has ended their lawsuit against Virginia for removing illegals from the voter rolls. So that means that all 50 states can now remove illegals from their voter rolls. This is going to be interesting.
Can or will is a big difference.
Well, that's true.
Well, can't they make that a national requirement? Does every state have the right to select who they're going to count on their voter rolls?
Well,
I hope that that's not.
There's a different issue that has to be decided, and that is at the Census Bureau. Are we going to continue to count illegals for the purposes of census, which determines how many representatives we have in Congress?
That's what I mean. That's the issue.
Which is horrible because the House of Representatives is supposed to represent Americans, not people who are here illegally.
Yeah, well, they're counting the illegals, even if they're not on the voting rolls.
Yes.
In the census. And I don't think they should count them in the census.
Well, that gives California, New York, and a couple of other states more representatives than they're actually entitled to.
I don't even care about that issue. I just don't think they're not citizens. They should not be involved in the machinery of our government.
Likewise, they're not citizens. They should not collect funds from our relief efforts, our welfare efforts, or whatever else.
While we're speaking about gold, this is a related issue with money. And Trump, his administration announced a couple of weeks ago that they were considering doing away with the penny because the cost, a penny is worth a penny, 1 cent, right?
Right.
But the cost of producing it is like 2 or 3 cents for each penny.
Yes, 3.
So you look at it and you get back to this thing about cents versus common sense. It makes no sense, and I'm talking about S-E-N-C-S-E, and it's not C-E-N-T-S.
The Treasury Secretary.
To have pennies, and nobody uses, very few people use cash anymore anyway, so that would save a lot of money because we're spending a lot of money on producing copper and making these pennies.
The Treasury Secretary was on TV yesterday, and he said, it's official. We're getting rid of the penny.
Good. Very good. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Again, welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. One more quick reminder. The CCTA will meet at Moore's Barbecue in New Bern on February 27th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. You're invited to come. Come early if you'd like to get the food and sit down and enjoy some good companionship. Where are we going to go?
Well, I'd like to talk about a couple of things going on at the state level. We've been talking about international things, but there are some bills being introduced. People have to understand that when they have a long session of the legislature, which is this year, they have short sessions and long sessions, and they alternate years, that the bills that are going to be introduced, that there's a time frame from the beginning of when the legislature opens in January until I think it's May, I'm not exactly the date, when all the bills that are going to be considered have to be introduced by that time. So you're getting a flurry of these bills being introduced now. And there's two of them that struck me that I heard about just this past week. The first one was a topic that I've been pushing myself personally for a while, and that has to do with the structure of our elections, of trying to reduce the amount of early voting. It's been operating for the last several years at 17 days.
17 days of early voting.
Including, well, the total voting was 16 days of early and then election day. And interestingly enough, there was a new legislator, a representative by the name of Wyatt Gable from Onslow County. And the interesting thing about it, he's 22 years old. He's the youngest representative ever elected to the General Assembly.
He took George Cleveland's place, yes.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, so he's in there and he does introduce this bill. And what it would do, it would reduce the early voting from 17 days to 8 days. You'd start on the Monday before election day, not the Monday before, but 2 Mondays before election, and it would go through. And I think my understanding is that it would eliminate Sunday voting.
Also, no Sunday voting, yep.
But it would be reduced to 8 days, which would make things a lot more manageable from the standpoint of running the elections and so on.
So you would have elections from Monday down through Saturday,
yes.
part day, and then you have Sunday and Monday off, and then you would have election day, the Tuesday.
So personally, I'd rather have it just on election day, but this is at least a move in the right direction. I don't know how much support it'll get, but it's a move in the right direction, I think.
I would also ask, and I don't really know whether it's actually part of the bill or not, just to remove that same-day registration.
Yeah.
I don't know where they stand on that.
I think part of the justification for the bill, even if it's not written into the bill, is that it's hard to recruit people to work the election when it's so many days early voting, mm-hmm. because those are long, hard days.
It's at least a 14-hour work day.
Yeah.
And so it would reduce some costs and so on. So that's a good thing. And hopefully reduce the opportunity for some kind of mischief to take place.
Now, you know,
and
Alan,
the more time you have, the more things can go wrong, in my opinion. I think it ought to be reduced. And that's the way it was. We did it for over 200 years on Election Day, that all of a sudden the Democrats wanted to extend it, early voting, write-in ballot, all this stuff. And then we've had more and more people question election results. So anything we can do to make it more trustworthy is a move in the right direction.
You know, Alan, along with that, we're in New Bern, and New Bern is the only city, town in Craven County that will hold a municipal election this coming year, or this year. And the cost of that election is estimated to be $94,000 for just the six local representatives and the mayor. And $94,000 for seven.
Yeah, and I understand also some of the county commissioners whose offices are expiring, like Tom Mark, who is the commissioner in our district, that people who, they're gonna have that election this fall too, which is, you know, you get such a low turnout when you have these off-year elections. It's really easy to control them, I think. I think they'd be better off, like you're implying, Bob, keep it on a regular two-year basis, not yep. these in-between things they slip in for whatever reason.
Okay. Alan, you had other
yeah, there was another bill I saw which I liked, and that has to do with what's called ESG funding. ESG refers to environmental, social, and governance practices. And this is a leftist supposedly environmental protection effort. And what it does is it requires people who are lending money, for example, banks or financial institutions, that they can require that somebody applying for a loan has to demonstrate that they're in compliance with these ESG requirements. For example, if you're a farmer, you can't use fossil fuel-based fertilizer. You have to comply with these really restrictive things. And so even though the government hasn't been telling the farmers you must do this, they've been making it difficult for them to get loans that they need in order to keep their business running. They've got to get loans to plant and so on. Okay. So this bill would eliminate would stop any bank or any financial institution from requiring ESG compliance as part of their lending process, which is a great step forward, in my opinion.
I think so.
Where it's going to go, I don't know, but I think there'll be enough support for it.
I think a lot of banks around the world are dropping ESG. It's part of the DEI nonsense.
Yeah.
And I think it was based on China's social credit score.
Right.
Yes.
This will keep it out of North Carolina, but I think in a larger context, the companies are dropping it themselves, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's like DEI. There are companies that are getting out of the DEI business, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, where they have to ensure that a certain percentage of their personnel, or their employees, meet certain criteria, a certain percentage of different minorities or gender or whatever the nonsense is.
You know,
so that's happening. But we still have, you know, you think about it, and you think with those changes taking place, why do we need something at the local level? Well, part of the problem is that at the local level, sometimes the reality is denied. For example, there was an effort made about a year ago to get the local Board of Education to remove DEI, all these things
CRT,
all these things. And the Board of Education at that time, the chairman of the board, said, well, none of that's being taught in Craven County schools. When in reality, that material was in a lot of the textbooks, was in a lot of the curriculum, but they just basically denied it was happening. So we were never able to get the Board of Education to move on it. But now I understand that President Trump is requiring that those things be taken out of the schools, and if they don't, they're going to lose federal funding. So it's happening from the top, but it needs to happen from the bottom too. We need to all be on the same wavelength with stuff.
Well, wait till he attacks DOE. He hasn't gotten a DOE yet, except superficially. They've been They've been canceling contracts for DEI.
Well, they're still waiting.
They've canceled $990 million in DEI contracts.
They're still waiting for Linda McMahon to be confirmed by.
Oh, and by the way, Kash Patel made it out of committee.
I know he made it out of committee. Yes, 48-42 or something like that.
His confirmation vote is supposed to be
Thursday.
Oh, I thought it was today at 6:30.
Well, maybe.
Today is Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday.
We're recording this on Wednesday.
Sticking with the state issues, at least, I also know that bills were filed for constitutional carry to, again, make us one of the, there's 30-something states that allow for constitutional carry. And then there's also another set of bills that are filed, I believe, in both houses that would stop the Attorney General of our state from suing our own legislature. They're supposed to work at the pleasure of the legislature, not work against the legislature. And we're...
I thought they worked at the pleasure of the governor.
Well, I don't know, because they...
The Attorney General.
The Attorney General is supposed to support our laws, isn't he?
Yes.
Okay. And who makes the laws? The legislature makes the laws.
Well, if he wants to sue over a particular law, he's going to have to sue the legislature.
And that's exactly what he has been doing. But that's the history.
So how would you address the issue if he can't sue them?
Did the legislature pass a legal law?
Well, the Attorney General has a problem with it, so I assume if he's suing them, I assume he has a legal problem that he's raising.
Well, I would assume that if he had a problem with it, that he would deal with it when the bill was being discussed and being considered by the General Assembly. Well, and he would have every right to do that. But to come later after the General Assembly passes the bill and come in and then take them to court, that to me does not make sense.
And a couple of years ago.
Well, it makes sense in the sense that at least they're asking for the state judicial branch to weigh in on it so that both sides know how the court sees the legal issue that's at issue.
Well, a couple of years ago, we as citizens of this state voted for a constitutional amendment, and the Attorney General at that time was fighting our constitutional amendment.
Right. And it went to the Supreme Court.
And it went to the Supreme Court.
And then it went to federal court. And then it came back to the Supreme Court.
And came back, and it's still not settled.
Well,
we as the citizens vote for something, why can't our vote count?
Well, that's what I point I made at the last show, that there's been some effort to try to allow the General Assembly, in this case talking about state issues, to override a state Supreme Court decision, because the General Assembly represents, as Bob you said, the people. The people are supposed to be the basis of the government, not some bureaucrat or not some judge on the Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court rules that something is unconstitutional or not proper, that's fine. But there should be a mechanism to override the Supreme Court. Otherwise, you've got an oligarchy of judges that are the final say in these issues. And that's not what...
Are you talking about the U.S. Supreme Court?
No, I'm talking about the state level now.
Oh, okay.
I'm not talking about the Supreme Court. I'm talking about state level. So anyway.
I know at the national level, Congress can vote to take certain things out of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So if they don't want to hear from them on abortion, they can just say from now on, abortion is not within your judicial purview.
Yeah.
They can also impeach the judges.
Yeah.
They haven't done either of those things.
Well, like Bob said, you see what they did to the photo ID requirement, Supreme Court, and the state had it hung up for several years.
Yeah.
Folks, we've run out of time. Again, thank you for listening to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Again, we ask you to come out Thursday night. You have a wonderful week.